hear me? And I also like to thank Jack for turning 75, for giving me opportunity to talk here. And well, one of my earliest conversation with Jack was about his picture about the cubic local connectivity. And let me just set the correct size. So he showed me the picture of cubic connectivity locus. And well, there was this non-locally connected part, and well, at that time I didn't know much about all the stuff, but I thought it was related to this parabolic implosion, which was I think first appeared in a Duardi-Hubbard paper on polynomial-like mapping. Okay. Oops. Is this correct? Okay. And so I'm very happy to talk about this subject now. Okay, just one caution before getting into the topology of Julia set, because a long time ago I thought about the topology of Kramer point, long time ago, and you can easily make a false assumption and make a false theorem. So I decided that when you have to talk about this topology of Kramer Julia set, it has to be a fine, clear day, and with a lot of sleep, but I didn't sleep enough last night and it's raining today, so don't ask me the question about topology, okay? So basically I'm going to show you a lot of pictures, okay? And I don't mention the positive measure theory. So let's talk about F0, which has a fixed point at the origin, and when I say parabolic, that means the derivative is a root of unity, and just for simplicity, when the derivative is 1, I say 1 parabolic. And when I say non-degenerate weight, that means the second equation, second derivative is not 0. So this is the main subject of this talk, but we also talk about the perturbation. And when we perturb, I just say it's near parabolic. Okay. So typically, we are interested in a case where the fixed point is, sorry?
Near 1,
yes. Yeah, irrationally indifferent case, and that's the case where you have a derivative and the rotation angle is irrational, and for irrational numbers, you can have continuous fraction expansions with coefficients AIs, which are integers, positive integers. Oh, they have nothing to do with, because this is for parabolic and this is for near parabolic. Okay. Anyway, when I say large continuous fraction questions, that means that these questions should be large, and sometimes it's more convenient to have minus signs here when you expand. Okay? So goal of this talk is to define a parabolic renormalization which assigns for one parabolic map, so the map having a one parabolic fixed point, to a new one which has again a one parabolic one. I have to assume that this is non-degenerate. And so start with one parabolic one, and what you get is again with the same form. Or we define near parabolic renormalization, or sometimes it's called cylinder renormalization. In this case, you start with a map with this rotation angle alpha, and then you get the new map, which is not the parabolic, but with rotation factor. And the beta is usually minus 1 over alpha, or 1 minus 1 over alpha modulus is the same thing if you put the onto the exponential. Okay? So, well, this one will be induced from a certain first return map restricted to some domain, which I will describe soon. So, well, in this sense, it's kind of usual renormalization. So you take a first return map to some domain and define the map, and you get the map in the same class. So what I'm going to do is to present a class of maps which applies to this one, and also to this one, if you just modify, a class of maps of one parabolic maps, so the maps with the derivative 1, and show that it is invariant under the renormalization. Okay? And, well, we give an argument that these renormalizations are in certain regions contracting or hyperbolic. Okay. So the plan is, first, we have to go through the definitions. Well, among the audience there, there are many people who are very familiar with this subject, and sometimes they're too excited when we talk about this. But I have to go through these definitions. And then, I also have to go through this parabolic bifurcation and implosion phenomenon. And it was largely studied by Duardi Habar-Labos from the beginning. And parabolic and near parabolic renormalization, which is the main subject of this talk, and the statement theorem and how to prove the theorem. Essentially, the theorem says that the class F1, which I'm going to define, is invariant under the renormalization, and then you can derive some more properties like a contraction and so on. And I show you some some idea about the proof. So we start with the definition of Fatou coordinates for the map of with one parabolic fixed point at the origin. I always assume that this is non-degenerate in the sense that the second coefficient is not zero. Okay, so I change the coordinate. Then from the dynamics near zero, you go to the dynamics near infinity. Then, well, with suitable choice of constant, you get to the translation by one. So you near infinity, the things are moving towards the right, to the right. So it's easier to understand. For example, if there's no little O term, then everything is translation by one, so everything goes straight to the right. Okay, so you can draw the orbit, so more or less going to the right. Then you can go back to the original coordinate. Well, if it's a horizontal line, then it's easy by this Möbius formation to go back. So these orbits are more or less like a circle touching each other at their fixed point. Okay, so the Fatou coordinates are the coordinates which conjugate the dynamics here or dynamics here to the exact translation by one. Okay? Well, unfortunately, usually you cannot find the single coordinate on the whole neighborhood of fixed point. So we do that on the half neighborhood. So like a right half plane or left half plane. For example, here, you take a right half plane, then you can show that there exists a Fatou coordinate which conjugates the dynamics to the exact translation. Okay? So for example, well, you can take a fundamental domain like this vertical line and its image, then it will be transported like that. Okay? And on the other side, you can do the same, taking left-hand plane. So essentially, these Fatou coordinates satisfy this functional equation because they are conjugacy between this and that. This may be a capital F naught, or you can define this from here. These Fatou coordinates should satisfy this kind of functional equations. And using this functional equation, you can extend more to a bigger region. Okay. So once you have here, then you can take the quotient of C by this dynamics. So the quotient by this dynamics means that you can just take the quotient by the Z. So eventually you get, well, you know that as a quotient, you get the bi-infinite cylinder C over Z for both sides, for red one here and green one here. And so eventually from here to there, you get the Fatou coordinate, quotiented Fatou coordinate. Okay? There's a new thing you can define, so which is the mapping from end of this to the end of this one. So for example, if you take the fundamental domain and pick a point here, not here, but here, very high imaginary part or very low imaginary part, then orbit goes through from here to there or from here to there. Well, here you don't know what happens, but if imaginary part is large, you know that the orbit will go through. That means there's a correspondence between a point in the fundamental domain there and another point in the fundamental domain here. That makes your correspondence between the end of cylinder to the end of cylinder. So from red side, the retaining side, to the attracting side. And it is only defined in the neighborhood of the end. Okay? So I call this map EF0. It's called a home map because if you take the fundamental domain, it looks like a croissant. And the maps are defined in this near the horns of the croissant, named by Duardi. So if you extend this Fatou coordinate to a larger region, like here and there, you can just write down the definition of a home map just following this extension of this Fatou coordinate and the composition of repairing inverse of repelling a Fatou coordinate and attracting Fatou coordinate. Okay? Or you can easily understood by just taking fundamental domain and following this orbit coming from red to green. Okay? So if you go to the quotient, in general, this kind of mapping is discontinuous, but once you take the quotient by the orbit or by the dynamics, it defines the continuous map. And of course, from here, you can see that this map is analytic. Okay? So this is main object, Fatou coordinates here, and home map. Well, what happens when you perturb? Okay? We have the same picture as before. Then we're going to perturb F naught to a map F with a derivative e to the 2 pi alpha, but alpha should be taken small, and I assume that the argument is not too big. For example, real perturbation, real direction for alpha is a good direction. Because the other direction, the remaining direction is not so interesting in the sense that not much bifurcation is happening, except if you go opposite, it's okay too. Okay? So what's happening is more or less the same picture, except that the fixed point bifurcates into two fixed points. Okay? You can do the same fundamental domains and do the similar construction. So what you can do is taking a quotient, you have a similar cylinder, C over Z, and a home map. Up to here, it's more or less the same. Okay? And moreover, from this construction, you can show that this home map depends continuously on the map F. When you move F, this one depends continuously if you normalize these Fatou coordinates in a nice way. Okay? Everything is up to normalization, so we take the good normalization. There's a new one happening here, new thing happening here. It's the orbit coming in and going through the gate between the fixed point and go away. So after, well, before, the orbit stays forever once you come in here, but here if you come in, you may go out from there, and, well, you may have a global dynamics outside this neighborhood. So, well, you have to analyze this kind of orbit when you trace the bifurcation. So there will be an orbit coming in and coming out, and there's a correspondence from green side to the red side, from attracting side to the repelling side. And this is a new map, which I denote by chi f, and it can be shown that this is an isomorphism between the cylinders. So that means it's just a translation by some number on the cylinder. Okay? And in fact, if you normalize nicely, you can write an explicitly this constant, which is minus 1 over alpha. So it's isomorphism of the cylinder, but it depends very sensitively on the alpha which appears here. Okay? And if you compose two of them, it defines the first return map. Well, at least in the neighborhood. So it means that composing these two means you follow the orbit starting from here, arrive to the green, then go all the way back to the red domain. So that defines the first return map. Okay? So when you want to analyze the orbit which comes back many times, you want to analyze the first return map because it saves you the time because, well, when you go through, it takes a lot of time, but that is represented by one iterator first return map. Okay? So there's a phenomenon called the parabolic bifurcation or implosion, which was mentioned already by Sherita's talk, but let me show you some pictures. So this is a picture of the field Julia set for z squared plus 1/4, or equivalent is z plus z squared. So that one has a parabolic fixed point here, and I'm going to perturb this one. So this black region is the total field Julia set, but as soon as you perturb, it changes very quickly. So there is a discontinuous change around the parabolic parameters, and well, this is a parabolic point is the reason of big discontinuity, okay? So discontinuity, then this kind of phenomenon can be understood via the orbit going out. Because before bifurcation, we had a Julia set and parabolic fixed point. If you follow the orbit in parabolic basin, it stays forever. But after you bifurcate, it can go through and do many kind of things, okay? So to analyze those orbits, you need to understand the first return map, which I defined in the previous slide. Okay, so much for the movie. So now I'm going to define the parabolic renormalization, which is a tool to analyze the first return map. Okay, so again, I have the picture I showed you before. So we have a fundamental domain, a parabolic fixed point, and fundamental domains, and home map, and so on. Now, if we normalize the Fatou coordinates in a nice way, you can normalize so that this home map, well, this is considered to be C over Z, so there's a natural coordinate there. Then in this coordinate, when you go to the limit imaginary part going to infinity, this is almost like a Z. Oh, in fact, I forgot to mention that on C over Z, this defines a periodic function, or periodic, or the map commuting with the translation by one. So it naturally defines on a map on the cylinder. Then we want to move from C over Z to punctured plane. So there's a well-known map, exponential map. If you write pi as this kind of exponential map with this coefficient, then it introduces isomorphism between C over Z and the punctured plane. Okay, punctured plane C star, and upper end would correspond to the zero, and lower end correspond to the infinity. Okay, and now we focus on only on this end. We can do the similar thing for the other end, but I'm going to focus on the upper end of the cylinder. So we are going to focus on this the origin. So if you change the coordinate by this map pi and moving to the punctured plane, then the map extends to the origin, and with normalization like that, you get again a one parabolic fixed point. The derivative becomes one because of this relation. Okay, so you're just conjugating this home map by exponential map to obtain the new map here. So this one is called a parabolic renormalization of F naught. Okay, so this is the definition I'm going to use. So this is the main thing you have to remember. So starting from parabolic point, goes through cylinder. From C over Z, you go to the punctured disk, and you get the home map corresponding to the transition between repairing cylinder and attracting cylinder. Okay. So near parabolic renormalization is similar, but in this case, you can forget about the half of the picture, because we already have the first return map on one cylinder, okay? Then you do the same coordinate changing by exponential map from C over Z to the punctured plane, and define the renormalized map. So this one with a tilde, and the real one is without tilde, defined near the origin, okay? Well, you can write them many ways. But since we knew the behavior of chi f, which is the transition map here, you know the derivative at the origin. So the derivative is going to be e to the 2 pi I beta, where beta is determined by this. Well, it came from the term appeared in chi. Okay? Well, you can write down also like this with the integer m. Okay? So this is the renormalization for perturbed map. Again, essentially you can understand that you just take a fundamental domain for this map, and take a first return map, and uniformize to C star, and the induced map is a renormalized map. So essentially, it comes from the first return map to the first the fundamental domain.
So in general, the
normalization map is not a near parabolic. No, in general, you can do whatever you want. So beta could be close to one half, for example, something like that. Okay, so the picture we want to see is the following. So usually there are a lot of renormalization theory in real and complex, and one of the goals there is to show some kind of hyperbolicity. So let me assume this. So you start with a map FZ with a derivative like that. Then you can just factor out this factor and use one parabolic map. So just factoring out the derivative here, you get the F naught, which is one parabolic. So it's convenient to write this way. So essentially, F corresponds to the product of alpha and F naught, which is one parabolic. Okay. So the space of maps are decomposing to the product, and we want to know what happens when you apply this R, the renormalization, total renormalization for near parabolic one. Okay. So for convenience, I write down this way. That means, well, in the product form, alpha is transformed into minus 1 over alpha because of the derivative relation I described to you. And then the fiber direction. So essentially, it's a skew product. So base direction becomes alpha direction. And the fiber direction is for F naught and R alpha of F naught. So, well, this direction is easy to understand, I think, like this. And the rest you need to understand is how fibers are transformed. And that fiber is described by R alpha of F naught. Okay? This is just a notation. Okay? So, well, just to decompose the skew product form, then ask a question whether R, the renormalization, is hyperbolic. That's the question you always ask. And hyperbolic means, in this case, well, you know what happens in alpha direction. When alpha is small, it's very expanding. Okay? So you may have a decomposition of alpha direction, and you may have several pieces, well, usually for small alpha, and then each one is stretched in alpha direction and contracted in the rest of direction. So F naught direction, it is expected that it's contraction. So essentially, we know alpha direction, so the question is R alpha, the fiber map, is a contraction. Okay? For fiber map, we know one thing. When alpha tends to zero, there was a continuity of home map. That implies that if you write down this way, the fiber map tends to the parabolic renormalization. So when you approach here, then the map is a nice description. And, well, in fact, this is a self map of one space of one parabolic map, but this domain of definition is yet to be determined. Okay. So basically, if you only want to know what happens when alpha is small, you just need to know what happens to alpha naught, the parabolic renormalization. Okay. So the question is whether this map is contracting in certain space with certain metric. Okay. And the answer is yes for alpha small. Okay. So main theorem. First of all, the kind of a priori bound estimate. So there are several things that I have to say, but we take a cubic polynomial, which is very concrete, and we also take two domains, which are also concrete. I will describe in the next slide, but these are simply connected domains, and one is compactly contained in the other, and contains the origin. Okay, so I define the class of maps F1 in the following way. So the maps is written as a P composed with phi inverse, where this one is defined in a domain which depends on phi. Okay, so this phi must be a univariant function. Here, the univariant means, just for shorthand, this, I just say that the holomorphic and injective. Okay, so the holomorphic, I already mean that holomorphic. And just the normalization condition is that 0 is tend to 0, and the derivative is 1. And P has a derivative 1 at the origin, so this one has, again, one parabolic. Okay. So the statements are the following. First of all, well, this one is non-degenerate in the sense that the second derivative is not 0. Otherwise, we cannot start the construction. And the second statement is, well, the F naught, I will describe it later, but the important fact is that, for example, if you take a quadratic polynomial with derivative 1, then itself is not contained in F1, but its renormalization, parabolic renormalizations are all contained in this class. Okay? So, well, quadratic polynomial itself, we cannot deal, include, but the next time you normalize, it's included. The main thing here is this. So, well, previous definition was kind of defined for the germs, but you can just define the parabolic renormalization together with the domains. So each time you renormalize, you have to specify a certain domain for renormalized map, but you can do that in a consistent way so that whenever you pick one map from here, a parabolic renormalization R naught F naught will be contained again in this class. Okay? So it's an invariant class for the parabolic renormalization. Okay. There's one more thing. Well, so since the image is in here, the result of parabolic renormalization should be also contained in here. That means it should be written as this, in this form, with, instead of phi, I use the phi as a symbol. Then the conclusion is that not only just the phi is defining V, but it has a univariant extension to the certain larger domain, slightly larger domain at least. And domain is fixed independent of phi. Okay? And well, dependence on of the renormalization on the F is in certain sets holomorphic. I don't go into the details here. Well, so F1 is apparently parameterized by the space of functions like this. Yeah, for the topology of that. Yeah, well, P, V, V prime are all fixed. I'll show you later. So it, they don't depend on anything. And phi will be moving because you can change the invariant function. That's the only degree of freedom that they can contain these maps. Excuse me? Oh, if not, I'll show you later, but well, don't really mind here. Just to say that this statement is more important. So when you start with a quadratic polynomial, its renormalization is already contained. Okay? And the theorem 2 is the statement for R alpha. R alpha was the fiber direction for a total renormalization. So for 0, I showed this. And for alpha small, I can also show the same thing. And for small alpha, that means at least there exists an integer n such that whenever you have a continuous fraction expansion, well, this beta can be a complex number. So if you have something like this with m, there was a missing condition that m should be greater than character n. Okay, so this n bounds give a lower bounds for allowed m. Then this holds. Negative m is okay, or yeah, well, it doesn't really matter. So we can conjugate and so on. So it's okay. Yeah, well, you can modify something like that because you can always take a complex conjugate. Okay. So just to show you what P is and what the V and V prime are. So, well, 0 is fixed and derivative is 1. The critical points are here. And one of the critical values coincides with this fixed point. Okay? So, and I'm going to take a certain number, and one of the most important numbers is 2. So we have to play with a certain numbers, and sometimes this number cannot be too big, cannot be too small. So you have to deal with a concrete number. Okay? So it's not in a sense a hard analysis, but it's analysis on hard numbers, the concrete numbers.
Two is a real number.
Yes, real number that exists. Okay? So what's the P? So start with the range. So let me draw. Well, center 0 is here. The critical value is here. Draw 2 circles. Or, sorry, 3 circles. One going through the critical value. And others are with this radius. That means you take the annulus of modulus eta here and modulus eta here. No. Well, in many pictures, I'm cheating because if you draw this picture, you don't see. Well, you don't see this part even, because if you take eta 2, that's too much. So I'm cheating the pictures a lot. And then I make a switch here, negative real axis. And its inverse images are here. So I shaded with the two colors, and the third color is here, but main two colors are darker and lighter. And then I take an inverse image of the complement of this slit. There will be three inverse images. And I colored with a bluish color, greenish, and reddish, and so on. And there'll be a component, components of inverse image of this small disk here, here, and here, and degree two map from this component to the small disk. Okay? So there'll be a critical point here and there. So this is a picture for P. And then I'm going to take a slit here only after this part and define this to be a domain V prime. So V prime is the colored region here. So I have a colored region here. So I forget about this component, but I keep this component because it contains zero. And here you have a 3-to-1 map to the region. And then I delete the slit. Okay. So that V prime is a simply connected domain. And the V I define you later, but it's going to be a slightly smaller domain than V prime. Again, eta is taken to be 0.3 or something for the picture. Okay, well, if not, I mentioned something, but this is, in a sense, a nicer family for the parabolic renormalization, but it doesn't work with the perturbed parabolic or near-parabolic renormalization. So it has a nice property for R naught itself, but it doesn't work for R alpha. Okay, and well, for quadratic, they are contained. And this class was used when I proved that the Hausdorff dimension is 2 for generic Julia set on the boundary of Mandelbrot set and so on. Okay. And well, there's a similar family to this for the critical circle maps. As, for example, there's a work by Epstein and Jampolsky. Okay. And in fact, well, they can stay in this kind of family, but there are several reasons that we cannot stay with this F0 family for our purposes. Okay. I don't have time to talk about that. Okay, so once we have this previous result about the boundedness, so essentially theorem 1 and 2 said that if you define the class F1 the way I define, then it is invariant under the parabolic renormalization or the near parabolic renormalization. B? B, well, again, if you draw a real set, it's kind of complicated, so I show you the definition later. Well, it looks like this, that this part is tiny, and minus 1 and 0 and so on. So once you have this a priori bound, well, probably, you can get easily the contraction hypobricity, because when I gave you a priori bound, there was one statement that there is some little extension to the definite neighborhood for function C, and that actually gives you the contraction property for R naught and hypobricity for total R when you restrict to the region where alpha is small. Okay. Well, probably I don't go into the detail, but well, you can make, just modifying the definition a little bit, there's a one-to-one correspondence with phi F1 and the Teichmüller space of the punctured disk. And if you induce the map on the Teichmüller space, this renormalization map is a strict contraction with a factor, and the factor can be determined by the modulus of the annulus between V prime and V. Okay? And the same thing for total renormalization R. Well, just to say a few words, that well, there's obvious correspondence between F1 and the Teichmüller space, because here I assume that the phi has a quasi-conformal extension to all of C. So just to take extension and restrict it to the complement of V, that will determine the a point in the Teichmüller space of this complement. And well, this is the one-to-one correspondence. And then you can use a lot of techniques like Lloyd and Gardner theorem, which says that Teichmüller distance is the Kobayashi distance and so on. Don't get too excited. Okay, so just to skip that part and try to prove the theorem one. But before theorem one, just mention that the theorem two follows from the theorem one and the continuity of the home map with respect to F. So once you get something on the zero fiber, well, nearby the zero fiber, you get also get the same conclusion as theorem one. That allows you all the estimates. So the only thing you need to do is to prove the theorem one. Although since I'm using the continuity here, so I don't know explicit bound for the capital N I mentioned. That's unfortunate. So let me outline the proof of theorem 1. 15 minutes. Okay. So one thing you have to be aware is that you cannot really compute R naught of F, the parabolic renormalization. Well, probably I can't generalize. Maybe Eckhart can compute or something in terms of a Borel transform or something. But in general, it's difficult to determine how it looks like or the coefficient of Taylor expansion. So you cannot really get hand on the renormalization. So what can you do with this? Okay. So, well, of course, theorem one says that you start with this class and you renormalize. You come back to the same class. So when you prove the theorem, you have to say that well, after you renormalize, you came back to the same class, right? So to define the invariant class of maps, you need the way to recognize that the renormalized one belongs to your class, okay? The way we do is to characterize the class of maps by the covering property. Well, this covering property is kind of complete covering and ramified covering of a C. So let me explain you a little bit. So anyway, this class F1 is a starting point and a goal of the theorem. Okay? The same thing as I said before. So we say that the two maps have the same covering properties, or in a classical times, classical terms, I think people said that the Riemann surfaces are spreading over C, and that's the way we view this domain. Okay? So domain is of F and G are the subdomains of C, but just to forget about embedding and just to consider this as an abstract Riemann surface and equipped with a projection to the C. So you can consider that this is a kind of Riemann surface made by scissors and paste, just to take a copy of C and take a several C and paste and cut and paste, you get this abstract Riemann surface. So suppose you have two of them, F and G, and suppose you have kind of identification between the range, okay? And well, we say that they have the same covering property, just when there is an isomorphism between these abstract Riemann surfaces, so that this commutes. Okay, it's easy. Or in general, well, for this C, we have a marked point, like a fixed point, and the infinity is a kind of designated omitted point. And there's also a critical value in the question, which is unique. So there's a three marked points on the sphere, so that gives you some kind of canonical isomorphism, even when you rescale or change the fixed point at infinity. So either this is identity or canonical isomorphism in this sense, okay? And then we do the same terminology here, okay? So when you have this diagram, it of course means that G can be written as this form. So this is similar to the form in the definition of F1. So when you are looking at these covering properties, it's natural to use a phi inverse because that transfers these covering properties. So you fix one reference map here, and it changes this covering map, and phi represents how you embed it back, embed the domain back to C. Okay, this is the freedom you have. So we will characterize this map F. Well, not the F, F here. You should rather consider G by the color tiling of the domain. So to identify whether these are the same covering, we color the range, and then we color the domain according to this coloring in the range. And when there are several inverse images, we change the color of the tiles and see what can be said. And I want to show you the case of F prime. So in the definition of F1, there was a V for the definition of phi, but I'm going to replace it by V prime, which is easier to describe. So there's a slight difference in the explanation. So it's an exercise. Take this degree six rational map and show that this has the same covering property as P describes. So take this range. Well, in this case, you have to adjust the critical values, but it can be done. And then look at the inverse images. V prime was this domain with a slit. Okay. Then you look at this one, the inverse images, this one, or there are other inverse images, but just restrict yourself to the E disk. Since we have a slit, you can cut open along the slit and make it, you can open along the slit and it becomes here. And you can see that they have the same covering properties because, well, each tile is marked from the range. And when you paste them together, they are placed according to the image. So the gluing is not just arbitrary gluing, but it's nice gluing. So this correspondence extends nicely between these two. Okay, so this way you just color the domain and recognize whether this belongs to F1 or not. Okay, before going to the proof, let me just make adjustment. Okay, so it's easier to work with the fixed point at infinity because if you send a fixed point at infinity, the dynamics is already close to the translation. So for two coordinates, will be very close in some sense to the identity or affine transformations. It's easier to start with. So, and also, we have to deal with this kind of family where phi is an arbitrary univariant function. So it's easier to work with the univariant function, not just a domain like this, but the function defined in the complement of unit disk, because there's a classical theorem of univariant function theory, like area theorem. Okay. So instead of having this kind of domain or the P, the B prime I described to you, I'm going to open the slit minus one to infinity to the unit disk and invert so that the fixed point is now at infinity. Then essentially what you get is a degree six rational map Q, which is written here. Okay. Well, if you're curious, you can just look at this. So essentially this is a change of coordinate in the range, and this is a change of coordinate in the domain. But essentially you're looking at the covering properties. Here you are allowed to compose univariant functions. So it doesn't really matter that these two functions are different. Okay? So instead of original F1, we work with this kind of family. So instead of P, we use a Q. And instead of, oh, sorry, this shouldn't be, so this should be phi defined in here in the complement of E into the phi hat such that the infinity is sent to C infinity and normalized at one. And since in the original coordinate, infinity was not in the image of phi, so in new coordinate, zero should not be in the image of phi. Okay? E is certain ellipse which contain the unit disk, and V is defined via this coordinate change. So this is the exact form of V. So how should can one conclude that after the renormalization it is in this class? Okay. So remember that the parabolic renormalization was defined via the home map and the exponential map. So remember this picture. And then from here, you change the coordinate by the exponential map to the punctual disk. So essentially it was here. So there's a home map here, then change of coordinate pi. Okay. So that means, well, instead of going to the punctual disk, come back to the cylinder, then here, this for home map, it was defined as a transition between two FATU coordinates. So essentially for the home map itself in here, the domain was repelling FATU coordinate, and the range was attracting FATU coordinates. So essentially, the form map is a transition between these two FATU coordinates. And so to conclude that some map is in this family, I showed you the exercise that you color the range and then pull back the pieces of the tile to the domain and look how they are connected. And if they're the way they are connected is the same, you can more or less conclude that they are in this class. Okay, so we want to do the same, but instead, well, going to the punctual disk, well, it's well easier for FATU coordinates to work with a cylinder. So just to remind you that I'm going to show you the checkerboard picture. But well, before for exercise, I took this kind of domain, but instead I want to deal with the C over Z. So So just to take a logarithm by pi, and then you get a periodic picture. So I color periodically, in this case, period 3. So each of these pieces will be mapped to the domain like this. And the central disk will correspond to this. So I color in period 3 in this, within this picture. So each piece will correspond to this, this annular. Okay? So instead, instead of the exercise, I'm going to do the color tiling for this one, because this is very convenient for Fatou coordinates. Okay? So first of all, there was original P. So this is the picture I showed you before. What's the logarithm? Take the pi and take the list. It looks like this. Okay? So since I took a periodic list, period 3 list, I colored in a period way, 3 ways. So each one of them correspond to this region, or this region, and this region, and all of these pieces in here correspond to this one, but so that you can distinguish these domains, I colored in period 3, okay, just for convenience. So now let's compare this with the picture for the return map, the parabolic renormalization. Before going there, I should mention that there should be a slit here. So I should cut open this domain. That's the domain we want to consider. Okay? So this is the picture for Q. So I'm taking a F, and F equals Q. So that's the case where C is equal to identity. Okay? And I want to know what happens to the home map. And I make a color tiling of this domain according to the range here, okay? But here, well, when you iterate far enough to the right, the original coordinate is almost close to the Fatou coordinate. So the color tiling there is easy, just to go very far, and then take ordinary color tiling. Then take the inverse image of this, okay, these components, okay? And then I cut off here, because I cut off here for P, and so the white components correspond to these regions, so on, okay? So you can see a similar, and we are going to take only the upper end of cylinders. So upper, from here you get the cylinder by quotienting here, and here you get this attracting cylinder quotienting this. And you just compare upper end of this picture and upper end of this picture. Well, you can see that it's very similar up to some level, okay? Blue here, yellow here, red here, and they are connected again with blue and yellow and so on. Or it's more convenient if you take another function, the example I mentioned to you, where it is, this slit is cut open, because that's the way we want. So instead of P itself, I just to show you the log list of Q, which is equivalent to P, but the slit was cut open, okay, in this picture. And then I again see the picture of domain. So because of time, I couldn't say it here, but well, just to forget about that and look at this pattern. Okay, well, there are deeper patterns, but you don't have to take all of them. Just to forget that this is there, here, and only take this, and compare. Well, you can see that the patterns are similar. So if you take a subset here, then this list is the same. At least it has the same combinatrix. Okay? So this is the key observation of the proof, but this is the starting point of the proof because you have to make it rigorous. This is the one picture for phi equals identity, but you have to show it for all phi. Okay? And there's a danger that since we, well, map F is defined with the Q and the phi inverse, and the phi is only defined in a subset. So when you take inverse images, you may fall off from the domain of definition. So it's like a just iterating, and sometimes you fall off from the domain of definition, you cannot continue. So that's the danger you have to avoid. Okay? So some more detail with this picture. So, well, before I showed you the to the right and the to the left, they are faraway pictures, but now we are looking at the central part. So there's a domain corresponding to these tiles in the Fatou coordinates, coming from the right, D2, D1, D0, where critical point for Q is here, and the critical value is here. So when you meet the critical value, well, this is a two-fold covering. It's a simple critical point. So there's a crossing here that goes to here, and so you can see that there's a critical point. Okay? Then up to here, it was very simple, just a copy, periodic copies. But now we start to have this singularities. Well, D-node has another companion inverse image, which is this. So both D-node prime and D-node goes to D1 because this is a locally 2-to-1 mapping. Okay? So since this point goes there, D-node has two inverse images here. Okay? D minus 1 and D minus 1 double prime. Okay, then you start to take inverse images. Well, you can go this side and this side, and you can go both ways. But just to take a few inverse images, well, there's a natural inverse image here. That's D minus 2, D minus 3. And, well, D minus 1 prime is the one which maps. These two will map to D naught. Well, D minus 1 maps to D naught, and D minus 1 prime maps to here. Okay, it's period 3 periodic. Okay, the coloring is period 3. And this one, well, this one and this one, this one goes there, this one goes here. Okay, and I don't know how many. Well, this one, according to the name, it should go there. And maybe this is the end. Oh, this one goes here for the next iteration. So, well, you start to see the cubic type pattern here, like the one before. So there's a main domain and two other domains attached to it, and that repeats periodically here. And that's the one you saw in the previous slide. You just go to the right, it becomes more like a periodic domain. So what do we have to do? Oh, I'm over time, so just go. Use some estimate from univariant function theory, and in the middle you have to do something to actually estimate that. First you estimate this domain, D1, and the shape, and then take inverse image, four of them, and bound the domain. And on the left, you can take an inverse image to the domain of definition for repairing Fatou coordinate, but there's a convenient way to do it. Take a Riemann surface covering the plane, and there you can lift the appropriate inverse branch of F. So there it's more convenient to do that. And for two coordinates we define there. Well, the Riemann, this Riemann surface X is defined from this kind of picture. And finally, there are some equalities I had to check. We had to check with the new computers. Just checking some equalities, log or exponential on these numbers. Okay, so to conclude my talk, I should say that just looking at this kind of picture, you could see that there are kind of cubic type covering, branch covering, or incomplete covering properties, just looking at this checkable picture. And there's one more thing you can observe from this picture. Okay?